And now on Tucson Business Radio X, your home for real estate with Carol Nugent.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Carol Nugent, your home for real estate at Coldwell Banker, coming to you from Tucson Business Radio X, recording in the Stewart Title Building on Broadway Avenue. And I'm really excited about the guest I have today. You know, it's the new year, and everybody's making plans and intentions. And I know that for a lot of people, one of the things that they're thinking about is whether they're going to buy a house this year. Interest rates continue to be at historic lows. And I think a lot of people, buyers, are a little frightened by the media coverage, which has been all about the low inventory. And as a residential realtor, I have to say that it does pose a little bit of a challenge because at least here in Tucson, it does get a little competitive. But there are plenty of houses for anybody who wants to buy one. And the biggest fear most people have about purchasing a home is financing. So I thought to start the year off, we would address everything that you need to know about financing. As a residential realtor who works with a lot of buyers, I have found that most buyers and the general public are really very uneducated about financing. So today I have brought on as my guest Steve Schrackengast of Fairway Mortgage. And I am very familiar with Steve. Steve is my preferred lender. And Steve grew up in Michigan, and he's lived in Tucson for 30 years. He has extensive experience and knowledge of loan programs. And I can tell you that his commitment to satisfying his customers is unmatched. And that is why he is my preferred lender. His lending philosophy focuses on guiding his clients through the lending process, educating them on their financing options, and ultimately helping them to decide on the mortgage option best suited for their long-term needs. And because I work so closely with Steve, I'm just going to add a little bit in that I've worked with a lot of people who are very intimidated and even insecure about the lending process. Some of them who, despite their feeling intimidated or insecure, are adamant about getting a mortgage and purchasing a home because they don't have any education. And Steve and I have worked with clients who don't qualify for loans. Yet, because of the kind of commitment Steve makes to his clients, he continues to work with clients so that they can qualify for loans. And we have had numerous clients that we've worked together where he's assisted them with getting credit repair or doing whatever they needed to do so that they would qualify for a mortgage. And I know that that is not the run of the mill for lenders. So I'm very, very grateful to have Steve as a partner in my business and for all of the ways he's assisted my clients. And I'm happy to welcome you here today.
Well, thank you, Carol. I'm very happy to be here also. Carol and I have worked together for quite a few years now, and it's been great. I do look at every client as like an opportunity. My goal is to change lives and to help people and to get them whatever they need, which in most cases is their first home. And we work really well together with that. And between the two of us, we can get that done. And, you know, the thing with me is, although some people may not qualify right away, we can always make a plan to succeed. So it's always about just making a good plan and then following that through. And then soon enough, they'll have their home and their dreams come true.
Well, and I think a good place to start is let's talk about financing.
Okay.
One of the things that I find is most people have no idea how many different types of financing plans are available. There still tends to be a belief, for example, just one type of financing, a conventional loan.
Right.
There still tends to be a myth I run into it all the time, yeah, that you have to put 20% down just to go conventional, right, much less the range of other types of loan programs that are available to people. So I'm going to let you
start with
conventional and the different types of conventional, and then going on from there.
Sure, sure. Conventional financing, that is the biggest myth. You do not need 20% down. Matter of fact, most people don't put 20% down. We have several products on the conventional with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that we can do 3% down, and we could do 5% down. And even with that, then we could use down payment assistance to achieve the goal of 0% down. So really, you don't need anything down to buy a house nowadays, but we do have to, execute it in a certain way. We have to make a plan. We have to, you know, get pre-approved correctly, make sure that we have the down payment assistance lined up and ready. And then, we could have the seller pay closing costs along with down payment assistance. We can get a customer into the house for little or nothing.
Well, let me back up, because you and I are pretty familiar with some of the terminology, but our listeners might not be.
Right.
So you talked about being able to do even conventional financing with less than 20% down.
Yep.
But isn't it true that that is dependent on credit scores? Or aren't there different types of qualification for the different types of even conventional loans?
Yeah, there is. Credit scores are, that's a very good point. Credit scores are a big factor, especially on conventional loans. So if you have a higher credit score, conventional loan is going to work really good for you. I would say maybe a 660 score or higher. Then a conventional loan is the way to go. If you have a score under 660, then we have several different other products that we can use. But any score 660 all the way to 800 would qualify for as little as 3% down. And then, like I said, we can get you the down payment assistance. So there's a lot of options out there. And, you know, another thing, too, is people don't realize that you can actually pay off debt to qualify.
Say a little more about that.
Yeah. So, you know, back when I first started this, like 22 years ago, you couldn't do that. You know, that was not allowed, but we could do a loan application and make a plan to pay off some debt, some charge cards or student loans or cars, to qualify for the mortgage to buy the house. So it's a really big, there's a lot of options out there.
And is that because by making a plan to pay off the debt, mm-hmm, you can increase the credit score?
Right. You can increase the credit score, plus you can lower the debt to income ratio.
Uh-huh.
So that's all part of what I call credit repair, or adjusting your credit to fit, mm-hmm, the program you need. But that's part of what I do, is when we get an application in and I'm working with somebody, I want to work with them very closely and, you know, and get the whole picture about what they're looking to do and then make a plan to succeed. So we can get the credit scores up in some cases as much as 100 points. We can also, get it to the point that they could qualify for more, because we can bring the debt to income ratio down, mm-hmm, with paying off some debt.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really, sky's the limit. You know, we can structure this any way they want.
Well, and I really want to get that message out.
Yep.
You know, I do this program because I want to educate and inform the public, yep, about what is a very complicated business. You know, the purchasing,
yes,
of a home.
Sure.
In this case, we're talking about purchasing.
Sure.
And I want people to be educated and informed. And what I'm really hearing you say is, contrary to what people might think, that, yep, if they get rejected or told that they don't qualify,
right,
that they don't have to put their tail between their legs and walk away.
Right.
That it's just a matter of, you know, I think most of us, we just don't know.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I know you and I recently worked with a couple that were very intent,
yep,
and determined on buying their very first home.
Right.
They're both working. They're both in college level courses.
Right. Yep.
They had no idea that because of the loans that they've taken out for their education, they simply didn't know that they couldn't even qualify for a home. And I took them, I mean, we were on a very, very lengthy, you know, process of looking for the home,
right,
only then to find out that because they didn't realize that they couldn't qualify for a loan. So,
right,
so I think that's a really important message, is you might not qualify for a loan, but that's not the end of the road.
Oh, no, that's just really the beginning. And it's never, with me, there's never the word no. We don't ever say no. It's all about making a plan. And how are we going to make a plan to succeed? You know, so we can pretty much get anything done with a good plan. And that's what I do, is I make a plan with people and I follow through with that to give them what they need.
So you're more of a, you're a mortgage lender.
Yes.
But what I'm really hearing you say is you're a mortgage lending coach.
Yes, really.
In that your commitment to your clients is foremost. And if your clients aren't immediately ready to apply for a loan, your responsibility and your commitment is to help them be prepared to qualify for a loan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That it's a very intense process. There's a lot involved with it. So I get to know these people pretty well. And in this process, it's all about learning what they want, what they have to bring to the table and what we can do and how much house they want. Then my goal is to get that for them. And you know, I work very closely with them and you to achieve what they need. And, you know, it's all really, I do this because I want to change lives. I want them to, you know, be successful in whatever they want to do. Even refinancing, if you want to refinance, you know, there's one person I saved $1,000 a month for. They could not get their loan done for 10 years. They've been trying to get their loan done and we found a way to do it. And we saved them $1,000 a month.
That's great.
Yeah, it really is changing lives. And that's why I do what I do.
Well, and that's why I work with you, because, you know, my whole approach to real estate is to be of service to my clients, whether they're buyers or they're sellers. And of course, on the buying side, you are just so helpful. To me, because you are committed to providing service to the clients and putting the client's needs first.
Yep.
And I'm very, very grateful, because I can say that there are a lot of lenders who that isn't their approach.
Yeah.
So one thing that you did mention that I'd like you to expand on a little bit is you talked about down payment assistance.
Yes.
That's another terminology. That's another program that I think a lot of people don't really understand, maybe not even know about it, until they actually apply for a loan and a mortgage broker says to them, oh, well, I think you apply for down payment assistance.
Right.
Can you say a little more about down payment assistance programs?
Yeah, down payment assistance is really like grant money. They're giving you money to buy a house. And in most cases, you need to be a first-time home buyer. But in most cases, that just means you can't have owned a house in the last 3 years. So then you're automatically a first-time home buyer, and you can get grant money to buy a house. So that is down payment assistance. We have several different programs ranging anywhere from 3 to 5%, which will give them the down payment to buy a house, which is very powerful. That's another program that wasn't out a long time ago.
Right.
But nowadays, it's very active. A lot of people are using it, and it's free money. Why not use it?
Well, and yes, my understanding, and I'm going to rely on you to this, but my understanding is if you do take advantage, if you qualify and you do finance a home with down payment assistance, you have to own it for 5 years. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. 5 years. They want you to stay in the loan and make sure you make your payments on time for 5 years. And then basically they forgive the money that you get. Because if they give you, say, $8,000 or $10,000 to buy a house, they want to make sure that that's protected. And as long as you make your payments on time for 5 years, then you're good to go.
Well, I don't want to be throwing something at you that you weren't prepared for, but I'm just curious. Say someone financed a home and they had to pay the $8,000 or $10,000.
Right.
With the interest, about how much is that actually costing them over those 5 years?
It's going to cost them probably double of that, about double of that, I would say.
So this really is a lot of free money.
Oh, it really is. It's a lot of free money. And it's a lot of people don't know about it. Like
right.
you said, they're, you know, they, I get that all the time. Oh, do I need 20% down? I can't buy a house. I don't have the down payment. You know, I don't have the money. I have too much going on. Well, really, there's no better time to buy a house than right now because of the grant money, i.e. down payment assistance, and because of the low interest rates. The interest rates are very low right now, historic lows. It's just a great time to buy a house, especially with the idea that we can pay off debt to qualify. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal because we can adjust everything and make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know.
And so with down payment assistance, do you have to qualify with certain debt to income ratio and certain credit scores, or is there a little more room when you're looking at a down payment assistance program?
When you're looking at down payment assistance, they're usually looking at a total debt to income ratio of 45%, you know, and that's pretty solid across the board. You know, the maximum debt to income ratio is 45%. There are a few programs we can go to 50% out there, but yeah, it's there is a little flexibility, but once again, with the down payment assistance, we could pay off debt. So if you're at a 55%, we got to pay off a charge card to make this happen. Then we just work that out and you actually pay it off at closing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can make everybody's dreams come true.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love them. You get them the money and I get them the house.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
And just one last question while we're talking about down payment assistance. I know that the state of Arizona had a very vigorous and generous down payment assistance program. It's morphed a little bit. When it was re-released, it was only released for particular zip codes.
Right.
Is that money still available or has that been depleted?
Well, so with Pathway to Purchase, which is, I believe, what you're referring to, that money has been depleted at this time. Now, they might come up with more funds in the future. That program was a 10% down payment assistance, and it was limited to certain zip codes. But
The second time.
Yeah, for the second. Yeah.
The second time. The first time it was issued, there were no limitation on zip codes.
That's correct. Yeah. It was limited. You know, when they roll it out again, which they may, you know, at that point, we'll see what they have. But it was limited and it's a great program. When it comes up, you should definitely jump on it. You know, we just have to get more funds available.
And I know that there are other down payment assistance programs. That happened to be the state, which my belief, at least, was that it was to stimulate purchasing.
Yeah.
And it certainly worked.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's a lot of purchasing going on. And that's what it's there for. It's trying to get first-time home buyers in the houses. And it's very effective. And most people utilize it. It's just a matter of education.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Well, thank you for clarifying some of that.
Of course.
And I know that there are some topics about financing that you think are important. And I do want to get to those. But so we've talked about conventional.
Right.
So what is FHA the next one, or where would you like to go from here in terms of educating people about the different kinds of financing that's available to them?
Yeah, I think that the next option I'd like to go over is FHA. FHA would, you know, you could do a much lower FICO score. You could do 580 or up, not with down payment assistance. Down payment assistance will require a 640 score, even with FHA, but FHA is more lenient as far as loan approvals. And it's really quite effective because, for example, let's just say I have somebody at a 590 credit score. I can get them a loan approval. They have to come up with 3.5% down. I can't get them down payment assistance. But even with a low credit score, you come up with 3.5%, you own a house.
Right.
You know, it's pretty amazing. And then we can go to the seller and have the seller pay the closing cost. Mm-hmm. And if they agree to that, then, you know, you can own a house for just 3.5%, which is really cheap. And you don't have to have perfect credit.
And there are no requirements for residents as with down payment assistance?
No. There are income limits on some of these programs, but it's case by case. You know, we just kind of figure that out as we go. That's all part of applying and seeing what everybody is approved for. But, yeah, for the most part, you know, anybody that needs to buy a house for the first time should be looking into this. Mm-hmm. And FHA just gives you more options. Once again, with down payment assistance, you can get 3, 4, or 5%. For the down payment, and they're giving money away, so why not? You know, it's a FHA. I'd say probably more than half of the people use FHA just because it's easier to qualify for.
And I know as a realtor that FHA, because they really are in a way lending you more money with less qualification,
right?
They do tend to be a little more stringent in terms of the condition of the property, which I think really protects the buyer.
Right. That's right.
You know, since I'm very involved with the inspection process when I'm working with buyers, and I've had that experience of FHA and also VA, which we'll get to in a minute.
Sure.
But there is a little more protection built in for the buyer. Because they do require that the home condition is a little more, I will say, secure and reliable.
Right.
Yep. And I personally, when I'm working with buyers and I know that they're going to be utilizing FHA or VA, when we start looking at homes, I immediately start looking for some of the signs that I know that FHA and VA appraisers look for.
Right.
Fascia and roofs and,
right,
you know, stucco cracks and the things that I know we're likely to possibly create a complication with later on down the line.
Right, right. Yeah, FHA is more strict with that. And that's a good thing for the buyer, mm-hmm, because, you know, they're going to make sure that you have a high quality house, mm-hmm, and that everything is functioning and that there's no repair issues. So that is one of the requirements of FHA. They're stricter on it, stricter than conventional, rather.
Right.
You know,
right.
VA is also pretty strict.
Do you have anything you really want to say about VA? I think a lot of people who would be utilizing VA are vets, so they have a lot of information on it. But I want to give you the opportunity if there's anything you'd like to.
VA is probably one of the best products out there. Of course, you have to have a military background, mm-hmm, to qualify for that. But if you have a military background and you have the benefit, mm-hmm, you can get a VA loan. It's 100% financing. Mm-hmm. There's no mortgage insurance whatsoever, so it means your payment will be lower. The interest rates are probably about the best out there out of any of the products. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we honestly, I think that it's just a great product, mostly because 100%, nothing down. You don't need down payment assistance. Mm-hmm. You don't have mortgage insurance. You know, we can get the seller to pay the closing costs, or as a lender, I can pay the closing cost. Either way. VA is a great tool if you have that benefit. It should be the first stop that we look at if they have the VA benefit.
And I think one of the biggest misconceptions that I would like to clear up right now is you don't have to go through a military lender to get a VA loan.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, you don't. Matter of fact, military lender is more of a something you see out there a lot, but that, mm-hmm, has nothing to do with it. Like, we work with the VA all the time, and you don't have to have a military lender to do a VA loan. You can come to me, we can do an application, and we can get everything set up for you, not a problem.
Just like one of the lenders who is traditionally, you know, working with military personnel,
right.
USAA, Navy Federal, some of the other.
Right, right. They make it kind of seem like you have to work with them,
right,
because they are the VA. Well,
right.
That's really not true. VA lends to any lender can work with the VA as long as you're qualified, and we are.
Well, and they also, I think, there's a misconception, I think, among a lot of military personnel or veterans that if they go to those lenders,
yep,
they have an additional benefit of some kind.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's really not true.
Yeah, yeah. We've ran into that,
yeah,
several times, you and I, and we have to explain to them that it doesn't, you're not going directly to the VA. Most people think they're going directly to the VA, and that's not the case. We work with the VA. And we are direct with VA. So it's not like you can just go down to the VA benefits office and get a VA loan. You come to me, and I can take care of all that for you.
And another type of loan that we don't work too often with,
yep,
but I think it's important, again, to inform people about it, is a USDA loan.
Yep.
Now, we're in an area. Are these primarily for land or for lots, USDA, or can they be utilized for residential purchases as well?
Yeah, USDA is set up to be for residential purchases, but it's for rural areas. So it's stimulating rural area growth. And, you know, they have USDA maps where you could, if you want to do a USDA, it's 100% financing. They do charge mortgage insurance, but it's reduced mortgage insurance. Their interest rates are great. The only catch is, there are some limits, income limits to it, and you have to buy in a rural area within their limits.
But, okay, so in the Tucson area, which, mm-hmm, is where we are,
right,
we have a lot of areas that might have been considered rural. Some of,
right,
them are,
yeah,
being developed,
yeah,
now. So,
yeah, right. That's
so
changing every day,
that's
right?
So do we have many areas left that would qualify,
sure,
for USDA,
yeah,
financing?
Absolutely. You know, the maps have changed recently, but down in the Vail areas, Sarita areas, maybe even out in Green Valley or Red Rock, you know, there's different zip codes in different areas. It's kind of in and out, but we can focus on an area, and if that's where they want to buy, they should definitely be looking at a USDA.
And what's the advantage of using a USDA versus, say, a conventional or an FHA?
Well, USDA, once again, we can go really low on a FICO score.
Okay.
We can go down to about 600 on a FICO score to qualify. So that's a great feature. To where conventional, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And also USDA is 100% financing. no down payment assistance needed, and they have a really low reduced mortgage insurance factor. So it makes the payment for the customer very, very low.
So it sounds to me like contrary to conventional FHA and VA, where one of the major qualifying factors is the borrower, him or herself, or themselves.
Yep.
With the USDA, the qualifying factor is the property.
That's right. That's right. I mean, the customer has to qualify also,
sure.
But the property, we look at that almost first. We need to know that the customer is okay with looking in these areas that qualify first. And if they are, then by all means, we should be doing USDA.
Okay. Yeah. Well, now I'm going to bring up another topic that's getting a lot of attention, or at least a lot of marketing on television and advertisements and mailings, and those are reverse mortgages.
Yes. Oh, reverse mortgages are amazing. I love them.
Really? Can you tell me what are the pros and what would you perceive as the cons? Because we're in the Tucson area.
Yep.
I hope that there are those of you who are listening outside of Tucson, but we are in the Tucson area where we have a very large percentage of our population is, I like to call us, aging adolescents. We're in our 50, 60, 70, 80-year-old teenagers.
Yeah, right.
And so there's a lot of talk about reverse mortgages here. And I really would appreciate you addressing the pros and cons that you're aware of.
Yeah, reverse mortgages, you have to be 62 years old to have a reverse mortgage, and it has to be your primary residence.
You have to be an upperclassman.
That's right. That's right. It's a qualifying thing. Got to be, you have to have graduated to 62 or older.
You have to be wiser and more mature.
Wiser and more mature. That's right. And with that, you could purchase a house with a reverse mortgage. You could refinance a house with a reverse mortgage. But the key thing on a reverse mortgage is it's no payments for the rest of your life.
So can you explain what makes the mortgage reverse? How is the mortgage actually paid?
So it's paid. The interest that you would have on your loan every year in a traditional mortgage, that interest on a reverse mortgage is just tacked onto the balance every year. So if you started out with a $200,000 balance, every year the interest would just get tacked onto it instead of you having to pay it. So and that's a benefit that could be for you and your spouse. If you're both on a loan, that will go to the day both of you pass, and you could keep that house and have no payments for the rest of your lives. And that's an amazing thing. A lot of people, once again, changing lives. I've had certain people that really couldn't afford to buy a house, but with a reverse mortgage, how can you afford not to?
Or some people can't stay in their homes.
Right. Or they can't stay in
their houses. Because once they retire, if they still owe a lot of money on their home.
Yep.
They don't have the funds, the liquid funds to make the payment every month.
Right, exactly. And, the other thing, too, is with a reverse mortgage, there's actually growth every year in it, in a sense that if you do a reverse mortgage and you have a lot of equity in it, they're going to give you like a line of credit, or they can turn it into an annuity, which is a payment or a retirement income stream for you. Mm-hmm. So it's really powerful in all the different things you can do with a reverse.
Well, it's powerful for the homeowners.
That's right.
But
that's exactly right.
But when does it all come due? there's this expression about when the S hits the S.
Yeah. Well, I mean, reverse mortgages are government-backed, guaranteed, just like Social Security or anything else. It's very, very protected. I mean, I do think reverse mortgages back maybe in the 90s and 80s, they weren't regulated. So they might have got a bit of a bad name for themselves.
Uh-huh.
But all that has changed, and it's just it's a great program. You can have a reverse mortgage, make no payments for the rest of your life, and your equity could be upside down, and it's not going to affect you because you are guaranteed that benefit.
But once you do pass on, if they've been adding the interest, the annual interest, on to the balance of the loan.
Right.
Okay. So you could pass on, and there could be $300,000 owed on the house now.
Right.
How does that get paid off? I think that's the question everybody wants to know. I think a lot of people hear about reverse mortgages, and as I was saying, they're a great thing for the homeowners.
Right.
But down the line, somebody has to pay the mortgage.
Well, and so when they pass on, you have a one year period of time to where you can either sell the house, or your in-laws or the beneficiaries could sell the house, and then they could take any equity that's out of it. Or they could refinance the house and keep it and just pay off whatever's owed on it and keep the house. Or if you want to and there's no equity in it, this is the great part, is you can just sign it back over to the bank and there's no probate or anything in the estate. So it's a really win-win. There's no prepayment penalty to pay off a reverse mortgage.
So a beneficiary child, let's say, because I think that's probably the most common person to inherit. So a beneficiary inherits a house.
Right.
And there is a there's quite a bit of a balance still.
Right.
Because interest has been added to the home.
Right.
It's possible. We hope not in an appreciating market, but it's possible that even selling the home, they wouldn't be paying off the balance.
Right.
So they could literally just sign it over to the bank and be done.
Yeah. They can go, you know what, there's no money here. It's actually, you know, the house is worth $300. They owe $400.
Right.
I'm just going to sign it back over to the bank and they walk away. Hmm. So there's no probate, no bills or anything to deal with. So it's really a great estate planning tool also. Uh-huh. You know, it works out very well.
It's very, very interesting. I'm so glad that you're here today.
Oh, me too. Thank you for having me.
I'm Carol Nigut, your home for real estate at Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. And I'm here with Steve Schrackengast of Fairway Mortgage. And we're here at Tucson Business Radio X, live streaming from the Stewart Title Building on Broadway in downtown, very close to downtown Tucson. And we're talking about mortgages. For those of you especially who are thinking about buying a house this year, as a realtor, I know all too well how important it is that you get educated and informed about all of the different kinds of financing that are available. And I've had really the pleasure of working with Steve. He is my preferred lender. He's helped so many of my clients. And so we're going to continue our discussion now. I want you to talk about appraisal waivers because I love the little secret gems. And I think a lot of people don't understand appraisal waivers. How do you qualify for an appraisal waiver? You know, what's that mechanism?
Yeah. So when you apply for, and we go to buy a house or even refinance a house, when we run the findings nowadays with all the technology, you don't, I would say a majority, maybe half or less of the properties, if the value is in line with the automated systems, it's going to come up that we can get an appraisal waiver. And appraisal waiver is just simply that. You don't have to get an appraisal for the house. They feel the value is good with the automated systems. And that's it. We don't have to get an appraisal at all. So it's very, very handy and very nice. And it saves money, too. That saves you about $400.
And do they use like an AVM? You referred to the automated programs.
AVMs. The technology nowadays, they've gotten it to a point to where they can kind of tell what a property is worth just by looking at all the different comps in the computers and everything else. So, with that being said, if the property comes up that it's eligible because there's enough comps and enough information, then it's just going to come up that it's an appraisal waiver is available. And then you can choose to exercise it or not. Because sometimes if you're purchasing a property, you still might want to get an appraisal. Mm-hmm. But you'll have an option to maybe not get one. It just saves you money. So it comes down to what the customer wants. Once again, if we have that option, great, we can do it. But the customer still may want the appraisal just to make sure their investment is solid.
Mm-hmm. So. And are appraisal waivers a part of every one of the loan programs that we've talked about, or do we only see those, say, with conventional loans?
Basically conventional loans. Yeah, that's where you're going to find the appraisal waivers at. Mm-hmm. VA loan's going to require an appraisal. FHA will require an appraisal. Mm-hmm. I would say probably half or better of the loans are conventional. And then, half of those are appraisal waivers. So this is one of those things that is growing every day. We get more and more and more appraisal waivers.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the Tucson market, we happen to be we're very fortunate that the last, I'd say, 18 to 24 months, we've really been operating in an improving market.
Yes.
Where values are rising.
Yes, yes.
Which makes it very difficult for some of the automated programs and even the human appraisers to keep up.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if you have anything to say about that. It seems to me, and I've experienced this with appraisals.
Right.
where the market is really improving and values are rising faster than appraisers can keep up with it. You know, I know there's a saying that appraisers follow the market.
Yep, that's true. Yeah.
So if the market is going up 6%, which our market has done in the last year,
right,
and even more in some areas,
yes,
at some price points, yeah, and a home, the comps that are being used to appraise it sold 6 months ago, their value might not be comparable to what the purchase price is.
Yeah, yeah. So it literally is changing all the time, right. And that's why they, you know, they really need to, if they're going to sell a house or buy a house, uh-huh, you know, they really need to get with you, and you can run comps and,
yeah,
give them a current scenario of what their house is worth.
Yeah.
And it's very important to do that really anytime you're going to do something like sell or buy a house, because the market changes all the time. Mm-hmm. And in 6 months, it could be $10,000 or $20,000 different.
Well, and I think another thing that I'd really like for us to talk a little bit about is, what is the value of an appraisal? You know, another misconception that I run into, right, is a lot of buyers, I don't think, if they're newer, if,
right,
they're experienced, that's a different story.
Right.
But if they're new buyers, or they maybe haven't bought a house for a while.
Right.
You know, we have a lot of people in the Tucson area.
Yep.
They bought their first house 20, 25, 30, 40 years,
yeah,
ago. Now they're moving here to retire.
Right.
They haven't bought a house in so long. They don't even remember anything about the process.
Right.
And I think that one of the things that I do, and I hope as the lender, you're comfortable with this.
Sure.
But I always explain to people that the appraisal is for the benefit of the lender. That the real purpose of the appraisal is the lender who's taking the risk,
right,
in lending you the funds for the home.
Right.
They want to make sure that the risk that they're taking, you know, that the home really is the same value as the loan that they're issuing.
Right. Yeah, it is. It is really for the lender. I mean, in a lot of cases, you know, the lender is writing the biggest check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're buying a $250,000 house and you're not putting anything down and using down payment assistance, mm-hmm, you know, the lender is writing the check for the entire thing. So they want to, you know, they want to make sure their investment is good. And it's also great for the customer too, mm-hmm, because everything the lender is doing to make sure this is a good investment and a good loan is protecting the customer also.
Right. So I'm going to just take a second,
sure,
while we're talking about appraisals, because I'm very lucky. I haven't had too many problems with appraisals. I work very hard to avoid that. But with an improving market like we've been working in, as I mentioned earlier, there have been more and more incidences of properties not appraising to,
right,
the purchase price.
Yep.
And I just want to explain for our listeners that there's usually three things that happen. In Arizona, where we are, the Arizona purchase contract does have a provision, mm-hmm, that if a house doesn't appraise, the buyer has the right to cancel the purchase.
Correct.
That doesn't happen very often that I've experienced.
Right.
The other option, which also doesn't happen very often, but I have had it happen, is you can have a seller who will say, well, buyer, it underappraised by $10,000, so I want you to bring $10,000 in cash.
Right. Yep.
I've only had that happen a few times, and it's not a lot of fun.
Right.
Because buyers don't really want to pay more for a house than the value of the house.
That's right.
As you were just saying.
Yep.
And the third scenario when a house doesn't appraise is that the buyers and the sellers, with the help of their representatives, their realtor agents, negotiate to adjust the purchase price to match the appraised value.
Right.
And I just want to bring that up because I think a lot of people get very, very anxious around appraisals for good reason.
Right.
You know, I get anxious,
yep,
because,
sure,
I want my transactions to work for my clients.
Right.
But I want to provide that there's a remedy for that.
Yeah.
That even if a house doesn't appraise, and I have to really say I've had a very small percentage of circumstances where a house didn't appraise that,
right,
the whole transaction canceled.
Right.
We,
right,
usually find a way to work it out. And I've had some really quite hellish negotiations that I've been involved in.
Right.
Primarily when the seller was an investor.
Right.
Because investors are a whole nother breed.
Yep.
They're selling that home to make money.
Right.
And when it underappraises,
yep,
they will do anything they can to get the money. They've probably got a business plan that has an amount that they were planning on making.
Right.
So,
right.
So,
and the margins are tight sometimes for investors. So right. If they feel the values there wasn't, appraised properly, then of course that's going to put a lot of strain on the deal. But like you said, I think there's several ways that can be worked out. And a lot of times it's just compromise.
Right.
If everybody can compromise and, and meet in the middle, then we could still close the deal. And, appraised values are changing all the time anyways, just based on the market. Lately, they've been going up. So we don't have too many problems with appraisals. But if for some reason there is an appraisal that was done incorrectly, if the square footage wasn't right, or say, recently I had an appraisal done that had two-story comps instead of one-story comps. We can actually.
And it was a one-story, the property, the identified property.
It was a one-story property, and they're using two-story comps, and you can't do that when there's one-story comps available.
Right.
So, we fought that and actually won that.
Yeah.
So there's ways that we can dispute appraisals, or maybe even if it's that bad, we could flaw the appraisal and then get a new appraiser out to redo the appraisal.
Well, and I'm going to throw in a little pitch for myself because I'm very, very committed to my clients. So when I'm representing the sellers, when I'm the listing agent, I am very, very proactive in terms of meeting with the appraiser, providing my own comps. If I have any concern that a house that I've listed might not appraise for the contracted purchase price, I will meet with the appraiser. I will provide any kind of comps that I can come up with. If there's been a lot of updates that the sellers have spent money on, I get as many receipts as I can. I'm extremely proactive.
That's super smart.
And I want the public to understand that, you really want, if you're selling your house, that's a question to ask anybody you're considering having represent you.
Right.
We're in an improving market. If there's any possibility that my house won't appraise, what are you willing to do to help me with that? And that's really a question that I would recommend that you ask. And if you're interviewing an agent and they kind of roll their eyes and hesitate and don't know how to answer it, that's probably not an agent you want to work with.
Right.
And an experienced agent knows how to represent the sellers to make sure that the appraiser gives the house the credit that it deserves.
Right. Well, and I think, that's a great, tool that you offer everybody, because in the end, the appraiser probably appreciates that too, because you're giving comps, you're giving information. They may not know without doing a lot of research or even know the cost of the improvements that were put into the house.
Well, and I know that as a listing agent, I sometimes struggle to determine list price because our market is improving so much and so quickly. And I have a lot of empathy for the appraisers because they're basically doing the same thing, only in a more complete, systematic way.
Yeah.
And if I'm having struggling kind of coming up with something, they're going to be struggling too. And I want to, partner with them to make it work out for everybody.
Well, and, I do believe the appraisers want it to work out too. If you have a seller that wants to sell a house for X dollars, and there's a buyer that wants to buy it for X dollars. I mean, the appraiser wants to make it work too.
Sure.
So if you can help that, which you do in many cases, I mean, that's amazing. That's just going to go a long way with getting the job done.
And one last thing I just want to inform people about is I don't know of any lender where I think by law, appraisers are contractors. They cannot work for the lender.
Right.
And so I just want to make that known, because that's another thing that I have to deal with, and I'm guessing you might deal with it, is, we'll get clients who don't understand why they have to pay $350 or $450 for the appraiser.
Sure.
They think that it's a service that the lender is providing for their own benefit, so that's in the mind of the purchaser.
Sure.
And so I think that's another thing is appraisers must be independent, and they're independent contractors.
Yes, absolutely. And they're rotated too. We have nowadays we have an appraisal management system that is outside of our company that we order appraisals through. And what they do is they rotate appraisers. So you're not going to get the same appraiser. We're not allowed to really discuss things with the appraiser. So it's very neutral, and and very random in a way that they will select an appraiser, a different appraiser for a different job every time. And that's great because it gives you an honest shake on what's going to happen, a fair shake, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this brings me to, I think it would be very helpful to explain the process. Mm-hmm. We're in a state where, we are the only state in the country, unless this has changed, but to the best of my knowledge, right, we're the only state in the country that actually requires, as a part of the purchase contract, that an Arizona Association of Realtors pre-qualification form be submitted. Right. You know, I know you've been around a long time, and sure, in most other states, it used to be common practice that a lender would write a letter, right, saying that someone, you know, was pre-approved.
Right.
And because I do sometimes deal with out-of-state lenders, I still have to go through this little exercise of explaining to them that in the state of Arizona, we can't take just a pre-approval letter. That isn't sufficient, which, right, I think is to the benefit of our clients. It can be a kind of a pain in the butt.
Yep.
But it, again, it protects our clients. It's very easy for a lender just to issue a pre-approval,
sure,
letter.
Yeah, they could issue a letter, and they may not have verified anything.
Right. And in this, that was exactly what I was going to say. In the state of Arizona, the pre-qualification form that is required,
right,
states very clearly,
yep,
you know, what they qualify for, at what interest rate,
yep,
you know, what their monthly payment could be,
right,
what the total amount of the loan can be. And it even has an area where it shows which documentation was submitted and reviewed in order, you know, to determine that the pre-qualification form could be issued.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great because that protects the seller. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to sell a house to a buyer that doesn't qualify, you want to know that before you accept a contract.
Well, and I think it protects the buyer, too, because, yeah, I think as we experienced in the mid-200s, mm-hmm, when there are lenders who are very anxious to loan to any buyer, regardless of how,
sure,
they do or don't qualify,
right,
we end up in the situation that we ended in with the Great Recession, which,
yeah,
was really driven by the mortgage lending.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know.
But back then, you could just... You could write up about anything, stated income, all these different products.
Right.
Yeah, nowadays things are a lot more strict, and that form is very handy. That pre-qualification form does protect the buyer because, you know, there is a certain process they have to go through to even get that form.
Well, and I think it helps them because it's very clear in black and white,
yep,
what the total loan can be,
yep,
and then it's broken down to what their monthly payment can be.
Right.
And I think that helps them get a little better grasp, you know. When you're considering buying a house and mortgaging the house, financing the house, that's a huge, huge, scary, intimidating thing.
Yes.
And I think that that form really is so, when I'm working with buyers, I like it because it's so clear on what the total mortgage can be.
Right.
And what the monthly payment can be. Yep. And I think, and I know you and I have this discussion a lot, I think that that monthly payment is what's really important,
yeah,
to most buyers.
Sure.
Most people, you know, not all, but a lot of people are going to end up with 30-year mortgages.
Right.
So to look at the total amount isn't,
right,
as important as how is the monthly payment going to fit in with their budget.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the most important things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of things we have responsibilities to kids and families. So, mm-hmm, they need to know what the house payment is. That spells, mm-hmm, that out for them. Mm-hmm. So that makes them comfortable. And really getting pre-approved is the first step,
mm-hmm,
you know, when you're out looking for a house. You know, if you do that backwards and you go try to find a house and then get pre-approved, you know, you might get crushed in the sense that you don't qualify.
I was just going to say that. So any of our listeners, if you're considering looking for a house, if 2020 is the year that you're going to finally take the leap and give this a try, you know, I would love to hear from you. I would love to help you. But the first thing that I'm going to say to you is, are you pre-qualified? Do you,
right,
have, and not just are you pre-approved?
Right.
Are you, do you have a pre-qualification from, yep, your lender? And if you don't, I'm probably going to refer you to Steve. Or if you don't have a lender, I'm probably going to refer you to Steve because,
yep,
we do work together so quickly. And I agree with you. I quite often am in a position, as we talked about earlier,
right,
with buyers. They want to go out. They want to look because,
yep,
they're looking online. You know, they're laying in bed at night looking,
yep,
through all of the commercial websites.
They find their dream home.
They,
right,
find their home. And then...
Yeah.
They want to write a contract,
yep,
but I don't have a pre-qual.
Right.
And especially in a market like we're in, where it's very competitive. If we have, it's not that unusual right now, especially at certain price points, a house goes on the market, within a day or two, there are three or four offers.
Right.
And so there's competitive bidding. And I can tell you, as an agent who does represent sellers, that what I advise my sellers when those three or four offers come in is we do determine how sound those offers are.
Right.
And any offer that comes in without a prequal immediately gets set to the side.
Right.
It's not taken seriously, and it actually isn't a valid and legal contract. It
right.
states right on the first page of the contract, yep. you know, that a prequal must be submitted with it. So if you are thinking about looking for a home this year, I would love to help you find a home. And I know Steve would be more than happy to take a look at your financial situation
I'd be very, very happy to help out any way I can. And sometimes just sitting down and having a cup of coffee mm-hmm. and you know, working a strategy out on how we're going to do it.
And if you're not sure,
yep.
you know, that's the other thing I would really urge you, give me a call, give Steve a call,
yep.
and let's find out where you're at and find out how we can get you on the road to yep. being able to maybe you can't get it in May or June, but
right.
maybe by November, December, you have Christmas, you have the holidays, yep. Hanukkah, Kwanzaa,
yeah.
in your brand new home, because
yeah.
we can help get you on a pathway.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know. Anybody can approach me in email, text, phone. I can talk people through it. You know, there's several different ways. Sometimes we just need to add like a co-buyer, a co-signer.
Right.
Or maybe get some gifted money from a parent or a relative. But there's so many different ways mm-hmm. that we can accomplish home ownership.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm going to give you the opportunity to give your contact information in just a minute. But I love that you said that the prequal is the first step.
Yep.
So let's walk through this.
Okay.
The first step is the prequal.
Yep.
That gets issued to me.
That's correct.
So I have it so that when we do identify a property and I assist the buyers in writing up the contract, I submit it. And let's say we get the contract accepted.
Right.
I then forward the fully executed contract to you. So then what's the next step?
Well, then the next step at that point is we usually lock in the interest rate. We disclose, you know, what interest rate, what fees we have, what loan product and everything. Once we get that disclosed, and they generally just e-sign all the disclosures, we might update the file with any income docs we need. Also talk about, you know, inspections, which while I'm doing all of this, you'll be over there doing inspections.
But in terms of the loan process yep. itself, mm-hmm. once the contract's accepted,
right.
then they go into the actual loan application,
right.
the complete application process, correct?
Right. Well, when you do a pre-qualification, you are doing an application right there.
But didn't that change to that now buyers have mm-hmm. 10 days to commit to a lender?
True. Yes. Yeah. So you have 10 days. So you technically need the address to have a formal application, but I already have everything, you know. So once I get the address and a contract, now we're like live. And then we can lock in the rate. And then we send e-disclosures, collect any documents we need, and we just move forward in that manner. And then we order the appraisal, mm-hmm. and the file will go to underwriting.
Say a little something about underwriting, because that's
yeah.
another point of a lot of anxiety for people.
Sure.
Because underwriting is the final step before the loan is approved.
Right.
And this is what I really want. I want our listeners to understand, you know, we end up telling them as we're going through
yeah,
the process.
Right, yeah.
But I think it's nice to spell it out. We have the prequal, then the loan application
yeah.
Is completed.
Yep.
Then the appraisal.
The appraisal is ordered. Once we get all the disclosures back, we can order the appraisal. Assuming you have your inspections, the home inspection and everything worked out okay.
And then sometimes in the inspection process, we do negotiate a difference in the purchase price, which
right.
then is reported to the lender because that affects the loan amount.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, yep. and so then after all of this gathering,
mm-hmm.
the almighty underwriter gets it.
Right.
So tell us what really happens when a loan goes to underwriting.
Well, really, underwriters kind of just checking everything, making sure that what we did wrong and what we did right, you know. And a lot of times, as long as we did our job as a lender correctly, we've already ran an automated approval. So we already have that. And the underwriter's just following that. But they're going to check like your source of funds to close, and they're going to check the employment, you know, and they're going to kind of verify that everything is the way that we have on the application. Mm-hmm. And if for some reason they have any questions, they're going to make a condition on the question. They're going to condition for it. Maybe an updated paycheck stub, maybe an updated verification of employment, or maybe an updated bank statement or something like that. But, you know, the underwriters, they're there to help also. They want to make it work. You know, they're not like trying to turn loans down. They're trying to get them approved. Mm-hmm. And that's really the misconception. You know, underwriters are not bad people or anything. They're simply trying to help out. Mm-hmm. But they have a job of almost like a school teacher, of making sure everything's correct.
They're kind of like regulators in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
They're
yeah.
responsible for making sure that every facet of the loan application is accurate and complete and complying with all of the rules, the regulations, and the laws related to lending.
That's right.
Yeah.
So then once you go through underwriting, usually there's minimal conditions, a couple conditions. Sometimes there's no conditions. Mm-hmm. We go through that. We meet any conditions we need. And then we go on and draw the closing docs and everybody signs. And we own a house just like that.
So again, if an underwriter doesn't completely approve of a loan, again, that isn't necessarily a no. I'm going to give you an example.
Yep.
You weren't involved in this because I was the listing agent representing a seller.
Right.
This house went under contract within one day. But in underwriting, they tried to qualify for down payment assistance.
Right.
They couldn't. Then in underwriting, it was determined that the information they reported about their employment wasn't accurate.
Right.
They had changed jobs.
Right.
So we went under contract in June. We closed that transaction in November.
Right.
Because the person had to wait, I believe it was 180 days in their new position.
Right.
So I'm bringing this up because my message to the public is, if you really want to buy a house and you're financing it, be accurate on your application.
Yes,
it doesn't serve you.
Yeah.
I know it's very intimidating to have to submit all of the documentation, and a lot of people feel like, you know, the lender's learning far too much about them than they ever want anybody to know.
Sure.
But it's really, really important to be honest and straightforward. And I can say, working with Steve, he's only there to help.
Yeah, that's really it. I'm here to help put a successful transaction together for the customer. And you're right, doing a very good and complete application, accurate and to the point, is very important, because if you don't have that right, then anything can happen.
And so, it's not the time for your anxiety to motivate you to become avoidant.
Right, right, exactly.
But I'm sure you run into that a lot.
Oh, all the time, sometimes, you know, people forget this or forget that. You know, so I have to sometimes question some things and ask questions and make sure it all lines up. That's all part of my process to even pre-approve a file or pre-qualify a file.
So those of you who are considering it, or maybe you've started going through the process, or maybe you've gotten out of the process, I really want to encourage you, certainly if you have a lender like Steve. I know it feels like a horribly invasive process, but get a good lender. Get somebody like Steve who's going to help kind of hold your hand through the process. And isn't there to intimidate you or insult you, you know, but is really there to support you in achieving your goal, which is to own your own home, which that's the last thing before we close this out. Yeah. I just want you to say a little something about the value of home ownership versus renting in today's market.
Sure. Owning a house, I mean, there's so many benefits. At first, tax benefits. You can write off your interest on your mortgage. You get cheaper car insurance. The time value of money also. I mean, when you're making a rent payment, say $2,000 a month, let's just say, you know, that rent is throwing money out the window. You're not getting anything out of it. You know, when you have a mortgage, it will pay off little by little. So you're going to have equity in your house.
And it's appreciated.
And it's appreciated.
You never appreciate in an apartment.
Yeah, right. If anything, the rent goes up. I'm sure everybody out there knows this. Rent goes up all the time.
So with the interest rates being so low, would you say that this is a great time
for
renters to at least call you and talk about it?
Yes. Everybody should be looking into it. Everybody. If you're renting and you're seeing your rent go up every 6 months or a year, which it is quite fast, you know, you should be looking into buying a house, because values are going up. But interest rates are low. It's a great time to get into a house.
And now a lot of people could own a home for the same amount of money that they're paying renting, especially with some of the programs that
Most people are amazed at the payment they have in the end. And then also they really, in a lot of cases, don't need any money or very little money. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell a lot of people, try to have a grand or two to put together just for inspections mm-hmm. and this and that. But if we can get the down payment assistance and the seller will pay the closing costs, we can work all that out. You can get into a house for really cheaper than renting another house. Mm-hmm. And it blows people away. They're just like, wow, you know, that's amazing, which it is.
So one last thing before we close it off, because you said the magic words, they're closing costs.
Yep.
This is a huge issue.
Sure.
Because people don't understand. A lot of people think that the closing costs are a part of the actual mortgage.
Right.
So they get the prequel yep. and they see that their payment's going to be X amount. Then all of a sudden they're getting ready to go to closing or right. they get their closing disclosure or they get their settlement statement. Yep. And now all of a sudden they have to come with if they aren't on down payment assistance
right, right.
or some other kind of program,
yep.
all of a sudden they have to show up with cash
right.
to close the loan.
Right. right.
So is there, and I think this is the question that a lot of people could benefit from.
Sure.
Is there a percentage that you would recommend that people consider they need to set aside for closing costs? And as a realtor, if in the process of negotiating,
right.
I always try when it's appropriate to have the sellers contribute towards the closing costs. Sometimes
right.
that's a portion of the actual offer that we make, and
right.
that's negotiated up front.
Right.
Sometimes it occurs when we do the buyer inspection notice and seller response, otherwise known as the BINSR, which
right.
is where we address any repair issues.
Yep.
And whenever I'm working with a credit on behalf of my buyers, rather than having the seller make the repairs, I always ask for the credit to be applied towards their closing costs.
Right, right.
But is there an amount that people can kind of keep in mind? Oh, 1%.
It will vary. I would say the average is probably 2%. Roughly, but keep in mind
2% of
the sales price
of the sales price.
Right. So, okay. you know, but that varies a lot too.
Right.
It depends on the program and it depends on the loan you're doing. Cause a lot of times I can offer a no cost loan, meaning I'm mm-hmm. paying the mm-hmm. closing cost.
Okay.
So there's so many options that we can do and we can generally make anything work, which once again, that comes back to making a good plan
right
at the beginning.
Okay.
You know, so how much funds do we have available? How much do we want to spend? And then let's just make that happen for them. And also, you know, make sure that we have a realistic guideline of what we're going to do up front. So that way, when they get to the closing table, they don't have to come in with extra money.
And I'm just going to add to that as we close this out, that it really does benefit buyers
yeah.
to have a realtor and a lender who work closely together.
Yes.
For all of the reasons we've been saying here today,
right.
there really needs to be a very close cooperative relationship, partnership,
right.
because as the realtor, I'm the one doing all of the negotiating
right.
on behalf of the client. And as the lender, you know, Steve is providing the funds for whatever I negotiate
right.
or adjusting the funds depending on what I negotiate.
Right.
So if, you know, I really recommend that you know, when those of you who are looking for a realtor, find out if they have a lender that they have a very good, close, cooperative partnership with, because it
right.
will benefit you in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. And also back to you, Carol, I mean, it's very important to have a real estate agent that's knowledgeable and knows all the options, because mostly it's laying out options. And I will say Carol is the best. She is one of the best real estate agents. We've done so many deals together. All of her clients love her.
Well, but Steve, what Steve's not telling you is I'm not the most knowledgeable person, but I ask a lot of questions.
And, she's
I
great.
Call him all of the time to say, what about this? And what about that? And how are we going to do this? Because I'm a realtor and I'm not an expert
right.
and I never will portray that I'm an expert on lending.
Yep.
I stay in my lane.
Yep.
And Steve has his lane and we work together. And so Steve Schrackengast, Fairway Mortgage, how can they get in touch with you, Steve?
They can get in touch with me. The easiest way is telephone. You can call my direct phone, 520-940-2996. Also email schrack@fairwaymc.com. Or, I mean, you can stop in. We're in Oro Valley, Fairway Mortgage, 10195 North Oracle Road.
And they can text you at that phone number also, correct?
They can text me at that phone number, too.
Yeah,
if you'd like to text, that's great.
Yeah.
Also have Facebook, Instagram. I'm available in many different ways, and I'd love to talk to anybody.
Thanks so much, Stephen. This is Carol Nigut. Your Home for Real Estate at Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. And my phone number is 520-448-6033. I would love to hear from you with any questions, if you're interested in buying or selling a property, or if you have any ideas or suggestions for this program. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of the day, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed Your Home for Real Estate with Carol Daggett on Tucson Business Radio X.